Session number 13653, reel number 4.
Mr. Brain, reel 4.
We heard on the night of the 4th of May on the BBC that the Allied armies would cease fire at 0700 hours the following morning. And that night, the Germans threw everything they had left at us, and the Poles retaliated. Their guns fired all night long, and it really was a most unpleasant night, because thinking the war was over, or very nearly so, we hadn't bothered to dig in or take much cover. But I'm glad to say that all my chaps survived, even though a lot of shells fell uncomfortably close.
Where was this place?
This place was at New England, nigh Angoland, which is not far out of Wilhelmshaven. And that was on the 5th of May, and my first impression as the guns fell silent was of the birds singing in the hedgerows. It was early spring, and one hadn't noticed these things before because of the noise and clamour of war. That morning, I was asked to go into the dockyard to assist with the taking of the surrender of the dockyard. And when I got in there first with a German-speaking liaison officer from the Poles, and we were approached by the vice admiral commanding the German naval dockyard at Wilhelmshaven. This was by the side of the cruiser Cologne, which had been scuttled and was sitting on her keel in the dockyard. But she was still manned by a lot of noisy sailors. We were approached by this vice admiral, who was the most extraordinary looking little fellow. He was about 5 feet high, and he wore breeches. And we had a good laugh at his expense, because he looked more like a horse marine than an admiral. We told him that we were not qualified to accept the surrender of the dockyard, and in due course, one of the Polish brigadiers came along and did so on behalf of the Allied forces. Amongst the parts of Germany which had not yet surrendered were the Frisian Islands. And therefore I went with a small British contingent to the principal island in a German E-boat, and I reported back the surrender and all the various details of the weapons upon the Frisian Islands. But on the way back, we stuck upon the mud, and in the darkness, the German pilot could not be certain where their minefields were. So we had about a dozen British officers and men incarcerated in this comparatively small boat with about 20 Germans. And we had to spend the night with them. And I think just in case there was any nonsense, we kept our fingers not far from our revolvers because we didn't like the look of some of the Germans who were still smarting, without any doubt, from their surrender. I then contacted the British naval officer on board HMS Royal Rupert, who was the naval officer IC of the surrendered German dockyard. Tell you his name too. Captain Condor, not Condon, Condor. Captain Condor was a tremendous character. The only trouble was in trying to liaise with him and send back such information as he had about the dockyard. You always had to have a couple of stiff gins before he would start. And he may have been capable of telling you what the truth of the situation was, but it was not so easy to record it and remember it sufficiently, even from your scribbled notes, by the time you got back to your armored car, where you could it could be radioed back. But we were there when the German vice admiral and his staff came in to the room where the surrender took place, and I always remember Captain Condor said that his instructions from the Admiralty were that Wilhelmshaven should be returned to the excellent Snipemarsh, which it was 100 years ago.
Can you say something in general about what the attitude of the members of the Polish Armoured Division were towards the enemy?
Oh, yes. Now, I've forgotten one thing, which I ought to have told you. Well, you asked me that question, and I'll tell you one thing that will, explain. Yes. How's that?
Carry on.
That's it.
Yep.
At Papenburg, the Poles were determined to treat the Germans as the Germans had treated them in 1939. And they overran a nursing home where there were a lot of German girls who were bearing children by German soldiers under their Strength Through Joy scheme. And some of these girls were in the last stages of labour, and they were moved out rather roughly, I thought, by the Polish medical corps onto the lawn outside in drizzling rain, because the Poles said they wanted the beds for their wounded. Well, I didn't like this. This was a dreadful sight to see these rows of girls lying out in the drizzling rain in the last stages of labour. And so I made it my business to contact a staff officer I knew at the Corps headquarters, 2nd Canadian Corps, and it was arranged that very shortly afterwards, one of the senior officials, I think it was General Simmons should come out on this road and see this happening, and he, of course, had authority over Maciek, and the girls were moved back in to their wards in this nursing home. During one of the nights we were in Papenburg, the local people, or perhaps their equivalent of Home Guard, had cut some of the Polish landlines to their formations. The general took hostages, who were mainly aldermen of the borough of Papenburg, and stuck them in a cage in a wire circle in the bitterly cold April day with heavy rain, and the cage was surrounded by men with machine guns, and the general said that if landlines were cut in the Polish divisional area that next night, he would shoot the lot. Whilst there, I was invited to see the execution of a Polish sergeant. I was in the armoured command vehicle one night, and then my friend, the chief of staff, told me that on the general's desk were the findings of the field general court-martial, which this sergeant had been arraigned for going into a German farmhouse, shooting the farmer and raping his wife. And his defence had been that this is what happened to one member of his family when the Germans invaded Poland. The argument against that, and he was found guilty of murder, the argument against that by the Polish was that barbarians may do that, but Poles wouldn't. He was to be shot at 0600 hours in a chalk pit close by, and I'd never seen a man executed, so I thought it would be another experience. So I got up, and my batman and I had a cup of tea, and it was a lovely spring morning. The dicky birds were singing in the trees, and Hackey and I, my batman was a chap called Hackey, old Trooper Hackey, who'd seen many a fight in his time on the Northwest Frontier. And I suddenly said to him, you know, Hackey, it's far good, too good a morning, after all the death we've seen, to see a man willfully shot. And tough old Hackey said, I'm so glad you made that decision, so I didn't want to either. So we funked it. But that was the standard of discipline in the Polish army, where I had frequently seen a Polish officer strike a soldier with his cane, which would have been a court-martial offence in itself in the British army.
So what in general was the attitude of the Poles towards the enemy?
Hatred. They took prisoners, they couldn't care a damn about them. They often left them in a compound, in pouring rain or bitterly cold. And on one occasion I had to say to Colonel Stankevich, you know, those men have been out there and I don't think they've had anything to eat or drink since they came in at dawn this morning. And then the colonel gave a few orders and the whole situation was changed. But the Poles had nothing but contempt for the German army, which had so ruthlessly invaded Poland.
But it sounds as though the colonel listened to you.
Yes, he did. Yes, he was a busy man. He hadn't realised, I think, that these chaps hadn't had any food, but I happened to know because one of my soldiers had observed this compound most of the day. One other interesting thing, the last perhaps you might like to hear because it has an amusing side. We had crossed into Belgium, and I came back from the operations room rather late for my midday meal, and my batman, dear old Trooper Hackey, had served me tinned potatoes, and they were soused in chlorine, I think, but they were horrible to eat. And I said to him, Hackey, you serve me any more of these beastly tinned potatoes, I will ram them down your throat. And he said, well, what am I to do, sir? I said, look, there's acres of potatoes around here. Help yourself. The next morning, through the gate into the field where my small unit was encamped, came my batman accompanied by two military policemen. And the sergeant saluted and said, this man says he's your batman, sir. I said, yes, that's right. He said, he's on a charge. I said, what's that? Looting potatoes. So, I couldn't help smiling at the time, and Hackey stood first on one foot and then the other without saying a word. I said, very well. He said, will you sign a receipt for him? I said, yes, of course. He said, we're preferring the charge through the Polish liaison officer. I said, all right. And cut a long story short, Hackey was admonished for having stolen some potatoes. But I was telling this story to the chief of staff later that evening, and he said to me, where is this field of potatoes? And because he knew that the owner of the field had, in fact, called the military police when he saw Hackey digging up the spuds. And he said, I will teach this Belgian to be a little more generous towards his liberators. And he picked up a telephone and spoke abruptly in Polish. I could only guess what he was doing. And he said, I have ordered a battery of 25-pound field guns into that field. And when I drove back to my little unit, already the bulldozers were there digging out enormous holes and chucking potatoes by the ton, right, left and centre, to mount their artillery in this field. So the Belgian, for his attitude, got paid out. I suppose he got compensation, but it's one of those amusing stories that it was my fault in the first place.